American Women. This is the story of women who have helped to develop the American way of life.
Daughters of destiny, mothers of might, homemakers of history. Women whose names are written large upon the honor rolls of our nation's great. Women courageous, who have served in sacrifice, worked in dreams, pioneered and persevered. Women whose names, deeds, and claims to fame have often been forgotten.
This is their story, and it is your story. 3 centuries of women whose deeds are rooted deep in our past and whose influence will reach far into the future. It's the story of you, the pioneer women of today who are blazing the trails of tomorrow. The United States Office of Education and the National Broadcasting Company take pride in presenting the 10th chapter in this epic tale of women in the making of America. Today we tell the story of the women who have helped to develop and preserve our great treasury of knowledge. It's the story of Women of Learning.
In America, hundreds of institutions of learning filled with thousands of scholars. In Europe, dispossessed scholars, fleeing for their lives and their learning. In Poland, in an underground hideaway filled with books and precious papers, a woman waits for one of them, Madame Adamowicz. Suddenly, there is a stealthy knock at the cellar door.
Elsa. Elsa, let me in.
Victor. You have news, Victor.
No. Still no word.
No word. Since the Germans took Krakow. 3 months.
We will find her yet, Elsa. She couldn't just disappear. Everyone in Poland knows Madame Adamowicz.
Oh, if I only knew what had become of her. I feel she must be alive somewhere.
She had so much to live for. So much to give to Poland.
And the world, Victor. How happy I was when the university women elected her president of their international federation. How proud of our great Polish scholar. And now, what is left of these few papers?
They had best treasure these, Elsa. Who knows what may be left for the learning of the world before this war is through. People said that another world war would put an end to civilization. Perhaps, who knows? It may end in 1940.
America, 1940. Virginia Gildersleeve, Dean of Barnard College and former president of the International Federation of University Women, summoned the aid of the women of this nation.
We, the women of America, must help preserve the world's treasury of learning. Now, when civilization is again passing through the dark ages, schools destroyed, laboratories used for purposes of war, scholars driven into exile, it is for us who live in peace to keep the flame of knowledge burning by sharing our libraries and universities with women of learning from other lands, by using our freedom of thought to enrich knowledge and promote international understanding.
A lady with the lamp that stands in the grave. A noble type, a good, heroic womanhood.
Women of learning. Sappho, the poet of ancient Greece. Hypatia, the philosopher, mathematician. Women of the church. Nuns in their cloisters.
keeping the flames of learning alive through the Middle Ages.
Women of the Renaissance. Isabella of Castile, bringing knowledge of the ancient classics to Spain from Italy.
Women of America, bringing their heritage of learning with them.
Grant us, O God, an understanding heart.
In early America, the voice of learning spoke through the lips of the French and Spanish nuns, guardians of theological and classical knowledge. It spoke through the lips of the Puritans.
So that learning may not be buried in the graves of our forefathers, we order that every township of 50 householders shall appoint one to teach all such children as shall resort to him to write and read. And every town of 100 homes shall provide a Latin grammar school.
Governor Winthrop, I would suggest that we establish a university here in New England, too. Methinks 'twould put no small life into the plantation.
Aye, and so it would, Mistress Downing. We men have need of a university.
And we women?
Women? What need have they, save to learn how to spin and cook and keep and prove them usefully and honorably in the place God has set for them?
And, of course, the women of America tended to their household affairs, weaving, spinning, churning, baking, brewing the medicines, curing the meat, molding the candles, raising the children. But in spite of it all, in spite of the primitive conditions and the lack of formal schooling, there were women of learning in America. Hundreds of faded brown letters and diaries attest to that.
The diary of Eliza Lucas Pinckney. When she was a girl of 20, managing her father's Carolina plantations, growing America's first indigo, she wrote,
I got no further than the first volume of Virgil, but was most agreeably disappointed to find myself instructed in agriculture as well as entertained by his charming pen. I'm also reading The Rudiments of the Law with the help of French and English dictionaries. And in my spare moment, I'm planting oak trees against the day when these colonies will need them to build fleets.
December 16th, 1773. The day anticipated by Eliza Pinckney is at hand. In Boston Harbor ride three ships loaded with tea. In a modest white clapboard house, Abigail Adams and her friend Mercy Warren sip cups of brew made from sassafras. Their fingers busy with their knitting, their eyes on their children, and their ears half trained on the words young John Quincy Adams is reading from a well-worn volume of ancient history.
Leon the Deaf marched his army.
I wish I had some better brew to offer you, Mercy.
Think you I drink tea, Abigail Adams? Why, my throat burns at the very word.
But John tells me that frog of tea will brew mischief tonight. He's gone off to a meeting to discuss plans. John Quincy, I thought you were reading about Leonidas.
So the Spartans marched toward the...
I wish your husband would hurry home from that meeting.
Mother, what's this word?
Let me see. Thermopylae. Leonidas was going to fight the Battle of Thermopylae.
How do you know?
Well, I ought to. The many times I've read that book.
Your mother's a very knowing woman, John Quincy. When she was a little girl, she used to read many books in your grandfather's study.
I certainly did. Shakespeare and Dryden and Pope.
Did you go to Harvard, Mother?
Oh, no, dear.
Why not?
Well, girls do not go to college.
I'd like to see any Harvard man write better letters than your mother does.
Or better poems and plays than your Aunt Mercy.
How did you learn to read, Aunt Mercy?
Well, I had a brother who went to Harvard. He used to let me read his books.
Oh, there's John coming in now.
Abigail. Greetings, Mercy.
John, what news?
There will be a tea party in Boston Bay tonight.
I knew our people would never accept that weed of slavery. Well, John, the flame of liberty is kindled, and you will carry the torch.
With your help, Abigail, no man ever succeeded in anything in this world without the aid and consent of his wife.
That's right, Mr. Adams. Let us separate from the British, renounce them. Let us beseech the Almighty to blast their counsel. As for me, I'll seek wool and flax and work willingly with my hands.
Women of learning, in spite of the round of household duties, and in the opinion of Abigail Adams, it is certain that a well-informed woman is a far better companion to her husband than one whose intellect rises not above the common level,
Yet here in America, female education is neglected, and it is fashionable to ridicule female learning. Female learning.
We, the Board of Admission for Yale University, wish to report that on this 22nd day of December, 1783, Miss Lucinda Foote, age 12, was examined in the learned languages of Latin and Greek and found fully qualified to enter Yale, except in regard to sex. Therefore, she may not enter.
Female education. Miss Mehitable Pemberton announces the opening of her select seminary for young ladies, where they may learn ciphering, French, and all the polite accomplishments, including painting on glass, making wax ornaments, and playing on the harpsichord, all taught in the genteelest and most elegant manner.
1780. In the rear of a store in Medfield, Massachusetts, a young man and woman pore over a book. He is a theological student who boards with the poverty-stricken storekeeper. And she is Hannah Adams, daughter of the storekeeper.
But this is amazing, David.
One would think you'd never seen a book before.
I never have seen one like this.
With all the books your father has, and all the students who have boarded here, it's strange you've never run across a good book on religions.
You misunderstand me, David. I've never seen such a bad book.
What? Well, but you said...
I said it was amazing. And I am amazed to learn that a book can be so narrow, so bigoted. I've always had a sort of reverence for knowledge. I remember my first idea of heaven was a place where we should find our thirst for knowledge fully gratified.
You're a strange girl, Hannah.
Oh, I can't expect you to understand. You've never had to eke out your learning, as I have, all by yourself, reading and studying, without any school.
Well, then how can you set yourself up as a critic of this dictionary of religions?
Because it's so obviously false. Because the author is always unfair to the denominations he dislikes, calling them heretics and fanatics.
All right, Hannah. If you don't approve, why don't you write one for yourself?
That's exactly what I will do.
But you don't know anything about religion.
Then I'll learn. I'll read every book I can get on the subject. And I'll write one that will tell the truth about every Christian sect that has ever appeared, from the year one to the present day. And Hannah Adams did write the book. Her view of religion became a bestseller, and though the author herself received as full payment only 50 copies, America was spurred to a wider understanding of peoples in a new spirit of tolerance, which increased with Hannah Adams' later book, On the History of the Jews.
The land of
them
is the great history of the
land. The voice of knowledge, speaking through the lips of a poor storekeeper's daughter, a self-educated woman of learning, speaking through the lips of hundreds of women in the frontier homes of the nation, women who treasure the knowledge they had inherited, passing it on to their children and their children's children. Knowledge of homemaking and storytelling, knowledge of folk songs, and in 3 hours, reading, writing, arithmetic.
A night in May, 1827, the people of Greenville, Tennessee, have turned out for a square dance in the schoolhouse. And leading the couples are Andrew Johnson and Eliza McArdle.
Come on,
look at Eliza
dance.
Getting tired, Eliza? I mean, would you like to go outside and rest a bit? I mean, it's powerful hot in here.
Yes, I am, my child, Andy. Let's go out.
Yeah, come on.
Kind of nice out here, ain't it? Quiet-like. And that moon, like a big yellow pumpkin.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wasn't really hot in there.
I know, Andy. I wasn't really tired.
Weren't you?
Uh-uh. I guess I could dance forever with you for a partner.
Well, why don't you? I mean... Oh, I guess you know what I mean, Liza.
You mean we could get married?
Uh-huh. Oh, I know I'm no great catch, just a tailor's apprentice. But soon I'll have my own shop, and we could live in the back of it.
And I could help sew.
You'll do it?
Don't you know I've been hoping you'd ask me?
Oh, Liza... Liza.
Let's go back to the schoolhouse and write our names together on the big slate so all the folks will know.
No, let's not do that.
Don't you want folks to know?
Well, sure I do. But...
But, Andrew Johnson, I don't think you mean for us to get married.
Oh, sure I do, Liza. Honest. I'd go right in there now and put my name on the slate. Except...
Except what?
Except, I can't write.
You can't write? Mm-mm. But you told me to write a book.
Sure, I can read. I learned that when I was apprenticed over at Raleigh. But I don't even know how to write my name.
Well, I'll teach you, Andy.
Would you?
Sure. It isn't hard.
I guess I got a lot to learn.
We both have a lot to learn, Andy. But we have a lot of time to learn it in. With you just 19 and me 17.
You think it isn't too late? You think I can get educated?
Sure you can. Boy, I'll bet you'll be the most educated man in Tennessee. Maybe in the whole USA. Who knows? Maybe you'll even be president.
Andrew Johnson, 7th President of the United States.
Women of learning, tending the flame, treasuring their heritage, passing it down. According to the census of 1840, more than 95% of the free white population could read and write, in spite of the round of household tasks, in spite of the fact that the door to formal, higher education had so long been closed to them.
But now even those doors were opening. In the South, at the Georgia Female College.
And at Oberlin College in Ohio.
Oberlin College became the first American college to extend the benefit of education to both sexes and to all classes of the community as far as its means would allow. A boon to women who had found the doors of knowledge closed against them.
But throughout America, there were already women of learning who, though they had never had a college education, were fit companions for the most brilliant masculine minds of their time. In Boston, they centered around a little old bookshop where rare books were sold. There, hoop-skirted girls came in to buy pencils.
But, Bethy, I don't need a pencil.
Well, you can pretend, can't you? It's worth spending 2 cents if we see the transcendentalists.
The what?
Haven't you ever heard of them? Goodness, you must live way out in New York State. The transcendentalists are philosophers there. They meet here in Miss Peabody's bookshop.
Pooh, who wants to see any dusty old philosopher?
Why, they're not dusty. Miss Peabody herself is one of them, and her sister May. Folks say she's betrothed to Horace Mann.
And her other sister was the beloved of Hawthorne.
Not Nathaniel Hawthorne. Uh-huh. Maybe now you're impressed.
He might be here.
He and Ralph Waldo Emerson, Longfellow, and Fonson Alcott.
And Margaret Fuller. She's the one I want to see.
Me too.
Who's Margaret Fuller?
What, you don't even know?
I am. She's the most brilliant, the most charming, the most fascinating woman in America.
Why, she knows everybody and everything, and she only went to school for 2 years in her whole life.
She writes books and gives lectures, too. My mother says Margaret Fuller is the greatest inspiration for women to learn things and do something with their knowledge. She says she'd give anything to hear her talk.
And you, Anne, you won't even give 2 cents.
Well, all right. I'll go in and buy a pencil.
Oh, good for you.
Well, come on, then.
Hey,
is that Margaret Fuller?
Uh-huh.
But you said she was fascinating. I think she's very plain.
Apparently, Nathaniel Hawthorne thinks differently from the way he's talking to her.
Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Let's go up close and hear what they're saying.
Well, Mr. Hawthorne, I believe that we transcendentalists should strive to bring perfection into this America, to make the ideal real in truth.
Ever in search of truth, aren't you, Miss Fuller?
Well, what else is there to search for? I dare say these girls search for it in their studies.
Well, we didn't
mind. Please don't go away. We'd like to have you join us, wouldn't we, Mr. Hawthorne?
Well, if the young ladies will be so kind, I'm sure.
You see, we've been philosophizing so long that we welcome new opinions, and you probably have them. I dare say you young people realize what wonderful new opportunities are opening up for women. And are already planning how you can make the most of them.
If only I could be like you, Miss Fuller.
I'm going to go to college and learn how to be a writer.
What are you going to do, Anne?
I don't know. I guess I never thought about it before. But I am going to be something. Someone important.
Well, whatever you do, whatever you are, don't forget that you can always go on in your pursuit of truth. Life is never so full, but there's room and time for learning. Give me
illusion. The granting of this prayer is sometimes terrible, yet nothing but truth will do. Women of learning, studying, thinking, saying, doing new things.
And the doors opened at Mary Sharp College in Tennessee. Here, the sister will be on equality with her brother for the developing and unfolding of all the qualities of her mind, thus making her what she was designed to be by her Creator, a thinking, reflecting, reasoning being. And the doors opened. Smith and Vassar and Wellesley in the east, doors to the state universities in the west, doors to law, theology, letters, medicine.
By 1875, there were 355 universities and colleges in America, 222 of them open to women.
Women of learning, going out of the colleges into the homes of America. Other, going out of the homes into new fields of learning.
Catherine Gallagher of Goucher College, learning about Italian men and women of the Renaissance and their labor relations.
Mary Follett, participating in the study of the modern state.
Dr. Louise Overacker, a leader in economic thought.
Mary Van Creek, learned in industry.
And M. Carey Thomas, first woman in America to win the degree of Doctor of Philosophy. A graduate of Cornell, with no chance of achieving her aim in this country, she had gone to Europe for further study. But after 3 years at the University of Leipzig, she was refused a degree on account of her sex.
Göttingen, too, refused her. But in 1883, she stood before the faculty of the University of Zurich. M. Carey Thomas, in full evening dress, with a long train and white gloves. 3 hours she stood, while the sages questioned her. And then...
Fräulein Thomas, we have examined you in your knowledge of the Anglo-Saxon, Gothic, Old and Middle High German on German literature. And we hereby award you the degree of Doctor of Philosophy, summa cum laude, an honor never before given either to a foreigner or to a woman.
Back in America again, as president of Bryn Mawr College, Dr. Thomas made it possible for American women to achieve the doctor's degree right in their own country. From the first, Bryn Mawr stood for the highest in scholarship, and President Thomas would never lower her standards, not even when the directors worried over finances.
Well, Dr. Thomas, unless we admit more students and so increase our income...
I wish that I could make the item from student fees larger than I have written here. But judging from the examinations, we shall again be unable to fill our halls. We cannot count on admitting enough students.
Ever possessed of her burning ideal of increasing educational opportunities for women, M. Carey Thomas continued her work at Bryn Mawr. Suddenly in 1920, she envisaged a plan to widen these opportunities for women still further.
I suggest to the board of directors that Bryn Mawr be kept open for 8 weeks during the months of June and July as a summer school for women workers in industry.
Industrial workers here in Bryn Mawr College?
Well, why not? Why not use these buildings and grounds during the months when the college is not in session?
But they're not prepared for college work. How will you choose your industrial girls?
My concern is to give educational opportunities to all women, including these industrial workers who do not have them now. These industrial girls will be chosen not as we choose our own students by examination, but through committees organized throughout the country, who shall be composed equally of college alumni representatives and representatives of labor groups. These committees will raise money for the scholarships of all the workers, none of whom can possibly pay for this opportunity. Democracy of learning. That should be our aim. Democracy with a high scholastic standard for all. Today, in 1940, the American Association of University Women
are upholding these standards with industrial schools, increasing the adult education classes open to everyone. America is beginning to realize that democracy of learning which Dr. Thomas heralded just 20 years ago. And today you, the women of America, have greater educational opportunities than any women ever before in the history of the world. In spite of large families and small budgets, in spite of time and household tasks, you at least have the opportunity. What are you doing to make use of it? To raise the standard? What are you doing to preserve and increase America's treasury of knowledge?
A lady with a lamp shall stand in the great history of the land, a noble type of good, heroic womanhood.
The story of women in the making of America lives on. The facts belong to anyone who cares to look for them. To help in the search for the woman's true place in American civilization, the Office of Education, NBC, and the Columbia University Press publish each week complete text of these programs. Now ready are the first 10 scripts. Other scripts will be available as soon as they are produced in this series. To help cover the cost of mailing and handling, we invite you to send 10 cents for your copy of today's program on Women of Learning. A complete list of past and coming programs, as well as the available scripts, is included with each published script. Address your request to Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. Next week, we hear the story of Women as Teachers, and the week following, January 16th, Women Explorers. We invite you to tune in each week at this same time to Gallant American Women. Gallant American Women, an NBC public service feature, is a series of dramatizations prepared and presented by the United States Office of Education, Federal Security Agency, with the cooperation of the Women's Division of NBC and with the assistance of the Works Projects Administration. Script by Jane Ashman, program supervised by Eva Hansen. Historical consultant, Mrs. Mary R. Beard of the World Center for Women's Archives, and Dr. Eugenie Leonard. Original music by Rudolph Strauss. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.